Thank you. Thank you. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Thank you. 17 habe ich ja. In the last week, we had been speaking of part of the life of one young prince whose name was Dhruva. Now, the story of Dhruva, I'll quickly retell. That Dhruva was a true warrior. His nature was that of a king. And the nature of kings is that they are very powerful and they are very intolerant also. And although he was a 5-year-old boy, when he wished to climb up onto the lap of his father, who was sitting on the throne, he was severely insulted by his stepmother. She told him, "You will never be able to sit on the throne. And if you still desire to mount the throne, what you must do is please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please the Lord. And then, even after having done that, the next thing you should do is die." Just imagine saying this to some impressionable 5-year-old boy. Die, and then if you are fortunate, you will take your birth in my womb, your next birth in my womb. And then, being born from me, even though you're already the son of the king, but you are so unfortunate that you have the wrong mother. So die, please the Lord, die, take your birth in my womb, and then perhaps you can sit on the throne. So Dhruva did not take this very well. He became deeply insulted, his heart, practically speaking, it cracked to the core. And just as these young children, these babies, were crying, why do people cry when they are frustrated? They don't get what they want. They can't fulfill their desires. They see no hope. It is hopelessness. That organ, of course, the adults amongst us generally don't cry whenever we don't get something we don't want. Inside we do. Or like Dhruva, he became ferociously angry. But just because he was a 5-year-old boy, he ran to his mother and he could not even speak. His whole body was quivering and trembling with anger and brokenheartedness. His father did not even say anything to chastise Saruchi, his stepmother, and did not protest, did not show him the slightest bit of affection. And Dhruva just went to his mother Samiti and cried and cried and cried. When Samiti understood what happened, she spoke words that transformed Dhruva's anger from something negative to something powerful and positive. She said, "Your stepmother's words were actually correct. They were bitter medicine. Indeed, the medicine that she has told you to swallow is bitter. But it was true." There's an expression in English, the bitter truth. And what was that bitter truth? that to get what you want, if you want to actually sit upon the throne, you do have to please the Lord. Because, actually speaking, we cannot accomplish anything by our own power. We need blessings from above. If everyone who wanted to be a billionaire with his own power actually became a billionaire, then what? then what? No. But if everyone who actually, if it was only the endeavor and the desire that made one a rich man, there would be, there'd be no poor people, exactly. But it is something more than that. We endeavor, and then by the grace of God, if He desires, He fulfills our desire. Or, as Prabhupada once said to us, man proposes, in other words, we propose our desire, and then God disposes of our desire. Man proposes, God disposes. Usually, that's ultimately the case. But in any case, she told Dhruva, what your stepmother has said is actually true. You should worship the Lord. Don't be inimical even with those who have hurt you, and you worship the Lord. Don't wish ill for them. If you go to Krishna, if you go to the Supreme Lord with a full heart, actually, sincerely, fully calling out to Him, He is more kind, He has more kindness than the combined soothing effect of millions of mothers. You go to Him, Dhruva. And Dhruva practically replies, where can I find God then, the Supreme Lord? And she said, when sages are actually looking for the Lord, they often look in the forests. Because there they won't be distracted by whatever it is that we fill our lives in with all day long, the distractions of, we can each name our favorite distractions. One young devotee once told me, television is the intoxication of my choice, is the drug of my choice. Often intoxicated in one way or another by television, by our computer, by the internet, by this distraction, by that distraction, by eating, by this, by that, by this sport. And our lives become so filled with busyness. Busyness, one thing after the next, after the next, after the next. Working to make enough money to live, so I can work to make enough money to live, so I can work and pay off this and pay off that, so I can live, so I work. But the purpose of life never comes up because we're so busy. So the busynesses. So therefore, Dhruva went to the forest to look for the Supreme Lord, even though he was a young boy. In one sense, he was, you can say, sentimental, because what can a five-year-old boy find? Where will he find the Lord? But he was sincere, and he was determined. And when he got to the forest, even though he was so young, Krishna had inspired one great sage named Narada to see him and to instruct him. But first, before Narada instructed Dhruva, he first tried to discourage him. It's a little difficult to understand why he did that. He tried to discourage him, not encourage him. He said, go home, Dhruva, to a young boy. What do you know of being insulted? You'll find out later when you grow up what is more about this whole thing. Dishonored. What does it mean? And he gave him instructions. What you want to do to find the Lord, the practice of mystic yoga, Ashtanga yoga, ending in samadhi, dhan, dhyan, samadhi, focus, withdrawal of the consciousness from this world, and a focus, a deep focus on the Lord in the heart, so that we are samadhi, our meditation, our concentration is simply fully focused on Him within the heart. This takes incredible determination. Sages have been trying this for years and lifetimes, and they don't meet success. And you're just a child. When a child is upset, the parents will snap their fingers, they'll take some little bell, and the child will forget. The child's consciousness tends to move from year to year to year to year. Sometimes ours may be quite similar to that. We don't keep very focused in having a true aim and objective in our life. We bounce around in our busyness and our silliness. And suddenly we find that we're a lot older than we used to be, or even old. And even one day we might even find out that we're... The life is gone, it's over, and we have only a few moments to live. And what do we actually have of value? What have we actually attained with our life? And that could be very terrifying when it's over. Dhruva, even though Narada was testing him, testing his determination and telling him to go home, Dhruva was not an ordinary boy. He was very determined. He was extremely determined. He was completely determined. So focused. And he basically told Narada, "Your words are true, but I'm so angry, so upset. I want to find the Supreme Lord." Again, what was his purpose? He wanted some type of a revenge. His father had told him that he could not sit on the throne, and he wanted to not only sit on a throne, but he wanted a kingdom greater than his father's, greater than his grandfather's, greater than his great-grandfather's. And he knew that even the impossible could be gifted to him by the Supreme, all-powerful controller. So Narada, seeing the great determination of this young boy, seeing his character, and seeing that not only was he desiring, but he was willing, and please listen to this, and this is where the problems usually occur, not only was he desiring, he was willing to align the rest of his life. That means himself physically, mentally, emotionally, intellectually. In every way, he was ready to align his whole life with his spiritual desire. Usually we take our spiritual desires, if we have them even, and align it with our body as much as our body will allow us, as much as our mind will allow us. To that degree we take the spiritual life, but Dhruva was just the opposite. He aligned everything with his spiritual desire so that everything was in focus with his spiritual desire. And he was powerful because of that. So Narada then instructed him, seeing the quality of his student, Narada instructed him in a process that was extremely difficult, but essentially the basic processes that are followed in Krishna consciousness. In essence, they're the same, the chanting, the worship of the deity, the reciting of the mantra, the trying to place oneself in goodness, the offering, the eating in a particular way. Everything aligned towards the Supreme. That is of course, how we ideally wish our sadhana, our practices to be. And after instructing Narada, Dhruva in this way, Dhruva immediately left for the holy place where Narada told him to go. Immediately. He did not pause for a moment. There is one little pastime that I heard, a little story about one very serious Brahmana, intellectual, who lived in South India 500 years ago. And he became inspired by some books written by Srila Jiva Goswami, an incredible scholar and an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was living hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, maybe 1,000 or 1,500 miles from Jiva Goswami. And he sent a messenger from South India to North India saying, "I'm so inspired by your books, the Satsang Dharmas. I'm so inspired. Thank you. Now I see the focus, the purpose in my life. Thank you." And then after months of waiting for a reply, because the messengers and letters were sent by messengers, people, one day, months later, he was sitting by the village well and brushing his teeth, and the messenger at that moment returned early in the morning, and the messenger had a message from Jiva Goswami, and he said to this person whose name was Gadardha Bhatta, the message was simple and to the point, "Come immediately." And Gadardha Bhatta put down his toothbrush, did not go home to pack his clothes. Maybe he rinsed his mouth, I don't know. But he immediately left because he was that serious. He was that serious. The doors open when we are focused and serious. It's because, in the words of the Bhagavad Gita, because we are bahushaka. Anyone know the meaning of bahushaka? Many branched. We go this way and that way and this way and that way, like many branches of a tree. And therefore, the results we get aren't satisfying to our heart, to our consciousness. So in any case, Dhruva left for the forest. And he performed incredible austerities. What's described in the Bhagavatam basically was his eating. He performed everything, he did everything that Narada Muni, his spiritual master, had told him, but what's described is his eating. And basically he ate increasing amounts of nothing. He didn't eat any. He started with eating leaves every 3 days and ended up breathing every 6 days, something like that. Because his mind was so incredibly focused to performing his Ashtanga Yoga, he was getting so much spiritual nourishment from his meditation on the Supreme Lord, and his determination was so complete that even eating did not distract him from his purpose, and it didn't bother him in the least because of his focus. So it was interesting to me when I noticed this, that only his eating is described to show us how fixed he was in his determination. In other words, how fully sincere and qualified he was in achieving his goal. And very quickly, within 6 months, his consciousness was so focused on the Supreme, so absorbed in the Lord in the heart, that he became, although he maintained his individuality, he became completely harmonious, one with the Lord in a sense, while he maintained his individuality. He became fully focused and harmonious with the Lord, and he was even disrupting the universe. And then the presiding deities, the powers that be in the universe, they went to the Supreme Lord and said, Dhruva is wrecking everything. Or at least they didn't say Dhruva, they didn't know the cause. But they said, something is wrecking the entire universe. There's a power, a force that is unleashed, practically speaking, and is causing havoc. And the Lord said, don't worry. This is simply the boy Dhruva. Of course, Dhruva was not an ordinary boy, as you may have guessed. But this is just the boy Dhruva who is performing austerities successfully for the purpose of pleasing me, so I will come to him and fulfill his desire. And then the Lord went. Dhruva was in meditation. Not exactly on his material desire, which was this incredibly huge kingdom. But his meditation was on the Lord. And while meditating upon him, Om Pavitra Pavitra Savavastam Gito Pisa Yat Smare Pundarikaksham Sabhayam Abhyantara Suchi, that if one meditates on he, the Lord, who has eyes like a lotus petal, one becomes pure, clean of heart, and pure inside and outside. What does it mean to be pure? Well, purity means the absence of impurity, absence of extra substances, unwanted substances. So our consciousness has a natural, pure purity to it. But now, at this point, so many additional unwanted substances are there. They are called anartas. Basically, they are unwanted desires born of passion and ignorance. And these items that contaminate, make our consciousness impure, continuously fill us with anxiety. I want this, and I want that, and I don't want this. Sometimes we want something that is wonderful by a material estimation, and it drives us crazy when we don't have it. But the real fact is we don't need it. Many of the things that we fill our consciousness with, of course we need certain things to live, so that we can maintain our body and soul together. But so many of the desires we have, born of passion, born of ignorance, are simply unnecessary, and they are like whips that beat us and force us into one difficult circumstance after the next. Actually, what we actually need is something completely different, usually, than what we want. The wants, the desires that we have on the non-essential level, are compared to a fire. And what happens when you feed a fire? Does the fire become satisfied when you add more oil or wood or even ghee, clarified butter to it? Does the fire say, thank you very much for taking care of me, I've had enough now, and now I'll get small and peaceful? And no, just the opposite. It just gets larger and larger and larger. And practically speaking, if you feed a fire of everything in the world, it will just want to consume more until it burns the whole world into ashes. So desires are like that. It is not by trying to satisfy our desires that the desires become satisfied. The Bhagavad Gita describes that what is born of the motive passion, which is symptomized by an increase of desire, is distress, not satisfaction. When we try to satisfy all our desires, we become frantic and feverish and distressed. So, purity of consciousness means consciousness where all the unneeded anarthas in Sanskrit, all those things that are actually external to us, that we keep within our consciousness, all of these, purity means they are cleansed, removed from the heart, removed, and then we become peaceful without being whipped and pushed by so many desires and unlimited thoughts. The consciousness, the mind becomes peaceful and steady, and that is the purpose of yoga. Yoga, citta, vritti, nirodha. This is from the Yoga Sutras early on of Patanjali. This is the purpose of yoga, is to make the consciousness, to stop the constant flickering of the mind. Citta vritti means the mind's situation. Citta vritti means the flickering of the mind, nirodha, to stop it. So Dhruva, although he had this huge material desire, because of thinking and meditating so deeply for so long in such a concentrated way on the Supreme, he, practically speaking, his consciousness was purged of those material desires. And as he was meditating on the Supreme, the Lord removed himself from his heart and stood in front of him. And Dhruva, at first, was extremely disturbed because he had been meditating on the Lord and then he wasn't there. His consciousness was connected to Lord Krishna. And suddenly, the source of the greatest satisfaction vanished. But then when he opened his eyes, he saw that the Lord himself was before him. And he was quite astounded. And he wanted to say something, because it's natural when you're confronted with the perfection of beauty, the perfection of bliss, the perfection of consciousness, the absolute truth. It's natural to want to bow down and offer prayers. It's completely natural, because we found our home, in one sense, in relationship to the Supreme Lord. So naturally, Dhruva wanted to bow down and offer obeisances and offer prayers. But because he was a young boy, he did not have the capacity to speak in very eloquent words. So the Lord, with his graceful hand, he touched Dhruva upon the head with his kamsa, and blessed him with the ability to speak, to articulate what was in the depths of his heart. And Dhruva then offered some prayers. And as you would imagine, because he was an incredibly deep person, he had incredibly deep realizations. I would like to quickly, let's see if I can actually do it, quickly go through the verses in the Bhagavatam that describe his prayers. Okay? That was good, huh? Pretty quick. No, I'll say I'll try my best to say what they are. I'll summarize them though. He stood before the Lord with folded hands. When we fold our hands, this particular... Actually, why doesn't everyone try it? Because sometimes this is a very famous Indian way to greet someone. It's actually a very, very, very nice way, because in the West we say, "Hello, how are you?" But you never know what the person has behind his back. When he's taking out his hand, you don't know what's going on behind. But when you go like this, no secrets. But when you do this mudra, you place your hands right over your heart chakra, which is about over here. Not here, but over here. And it actually makes you feel a little more sincere when you do that, because the heart opens. Yes? Yeah, okay. You're such a simple boy anyway. So, this is a way of opening the heart, or it helps when Dhruva did this to offer his prayers. So the first thing he said, was, "O Lord, you are all powerful." Now we could stop here and talk about this one, maybe tenth of the first verse for the rest of the night and more. All powerful, just try to understand what that means. All powerful, all power rests within you. Unlimited power rests within you, but yet there is power outside because it's existing, but yet it is within him. He is the source of all power. Unlimited power. Inconceivable power. And yet he has a form and he's standing right before Dhruva. "And after entering in me, you have woken me up completely by your potency coming to me with the touch of your hand upon my head. Now I feel like I am fully awake, alive for the first time. Especially my speaking power has been awakened. And now I would like to say something to you. And the first thing I'm going to say is, please accept my respectful obeisances. I submit myself to you." He submits. That is the first thing he does. That's the first thing he wants to do when he's confronted with the Lord. Not out of fear, but simply out of acknowledging that I am insignificant and you are all powerful. This is natural. Secondly, he says that you are the supreme one. There is nothing separate from you. In Sanskrit, one of the terms for this is the satyam param, or the absolute truth. And although nothing is separate from you, everything comes from you. Matter, spirit, nothing is outside of you. And it is your potency that enters into this world of dead matter and causes it to exist. And through your potency, you cause unlimited temporary changes in this world of matter. It is all going on by the potency of the Supreme Absolute Truth. And, as an example, you are like fire. When it enters into different kinds of wood, it will burn differently in different varieties, but it is the same one substance of fire that does this. You are like that. You are the Supreme who has entered into everything that's causing varieties of manifestations. Very philosophical. The Supreme people, persons within this world, this is the fifth verse, have surrendered unto you. And it is because of their relationship with you that they have potency and knowledge. No one, in other words, the intelligence, the ability of no one is separate from you or independent of you. The gifts of everyone are by your grace. He continues, you are the only shelter of all persons who desire liberation. If someone wants freedom from the material world, they must take shelter of the Supreme Lord. And you are the friend of all who are in distress. And that's an interesting one. You are the friend of all who are in distress. Because it is He only who can remove the distress of someone within the material world. Now, of course, this is a very big topic. And if I'm going to summarize these verses, I'm not going to be able to dwell here. But Dhruva makes the point, and Prabhupada makes the same point in his purport, that a person who knows the relationship of Krishna, of the Supreme Lord, to everything in every situation within the material world, and that person who knows, therefore, how to get shelter from the Supreme Lord, that person cannot forget the Supreme Lord at any time. There is an art, a science, a technology of getting shelter from the Supreme Lord. There is an art and technology and science for perceiving Him, because He is everywhere. And a person who knows this science, this art, this technology, can perceive Him everywhere. And a person who doesn't know it cannot perceive Him anywhere. Now, he's starting to get personal. Because previously, before he began his meditation and his yoga and his austerity, Dhruva had a great material desire. And he had approached the Lord. His purpose in approaching the Lord was to fulfill that desire. And after having the Lord standing right in front of him, one may think that now is the time to ask for the kingdom. This is what you wanted. Now is the time to ask for it. He's right here. He's come. Dhruva is not going to ask for it. After explaining something about the potency of the Lord, he says, and please listen, persons who worship you simply for the sense gratification of this body are in an illusion. Because you are like a desire tree. You can give them anything. You are unlimited. You are the giver of benediction. You can award anything to anyone, and if someone asks you for something petty and small, like going to the king, and the king agreeing to give you whatever you want, and you say, I'd like a handful of ashes. Or the story that Prabhupada told about the old lady who in India, in Vrindavan, you still see this, the young and old ladies go out often into the forest to gather firewood. You can still see this. And they put together these huge bundles of firewood. And they're so big that they cannot take them and put them on their own and carry things on their heads. So they cannot lift the bundles and put them on their heads. So two of the ladies come, and the one lady sort of bends down a little bit, and they place the bundle on her head, and then she goes walking off. And then, of course, you wonder what's going to happen to the last lady who's put it on me. But anyway, she gets to go home without any firewood on her head. So this one lady was walking back to a home with a huge bundle of firewood on her head, and there was a low branch of a tree, and she didn't see the low branch of the tree. And she walked into the low branch of the tree, and it knocked the firewood off of her head. And it went onto the ground, and there she was in the middle of the forest. She had struggled all day long to collect this firewood, and now it was on the ground in the middle of the forest, and she couldn't put it on her head to bring it home. And she was a pious lady. So she began to, of course, cry first, and then she began to pray. Oh Lord, here I am, an old lady alone in the forest. Please come, I have no one else but you. Please come to me. I cannot act by myself. Please, I'm begging you. I need your help. And amazingly enough, in her sincerity and simplicity, suddenly, Krishna appeared and said, "Oh, you called me. What do you want?" "Oh, thank you. You've come. Please help me put this bundle of wood on my head. I can't carry it." So Prabhupada is telling a story like that. He would say something like, "Just see. He told another similar one. How in India there used to be canals with water and barges on it. A flatboat where you put so much cargo on it. And the barges, sometimes when you have to go upstream, men on either side of the small canal. There would be heavy ropes and they would pull the barges. So, and they were pulling on the side of the canal, and there were rocks and there were thorns and there were bushes. And it was so hard work, low pay. And they were pulling and pulling, and this one man was daydreaming, "Only if I had $1,000,000, then I would put the finest carpeting on the side of the canal so it wouldn't hurt me when I walk." Of course, he did not consider that if he had $1,000,000, he would not have to work pulling the barge. He could retire very easily. But he was thinking very small. So similarly, Dhruva is saying, only by the influence of illusion. Illusion basically means small thinking. That in spite of having you, who can award anything to anyone, who can even pull us free from birth and death, a foolish person such as me desires benedictions, blessings for petty things just to enjoy my senses. My consciousness is so small and compact, contracted, that I'm just thinking of my body and how to enjoy my body. When you are here able to give me anything, that's what I don't want. I don't want what I had previously wanted. But what do I want now? When the consciousness is free from impurity, that means the absence of all impurities, what is there? What is the desire of a soul, a person who is free from impurity? So Dhruva says, the bliss, the ecstasy that comes from just thinking about you, meditating on your lotus feet, or hearing about you. Hearing about your glories from pure souls who love you, the ecstasy of that is unlimited. Beyond any stage, even duration of the material world. What to speak of temporarily elevating yourself to go to a heavenly planet. So what is he desiring? He's saying the best thing is to have one's consciousness focused upon your glories by hearing about you, O Lord, or meditating about you, because in those you are actually present. In hearing about Krishna from a pure source, Krishna is actually present, and the bliss that comes from associating with Krishna makes everything else appear completely useless and insignificant. Everything from being the king, the ruler of the greatest kingdom in existence, which I was desiring, Dhruva said, or even liberation from this world, becoming one, all these are useless compared to the simple bliss that is derived from hearing your glories, or in other words, associating with you in a serving mood. So bless me, he says. So I found this quite not shocking, but yet somehow surprising, that Dhruva's desire was simply to associate with great devotees who love you and who constantly are satisfied simply by serving you. Their consciousness is so elevated, it is satisfied simply by serving you. And I just want their association. That is what I want. I don't require anything else. Previously, his desire was for kingdoms, great kingdoms, unlimitedly great kingdoms. But once purifying his consciousness, and once actually seeing the Lord before him, all he wanted was to be with those who love the Lord, who have bhakti for Krishna, who love him, because in that way he would experience Krishna himself. Such transcendental devotees are completely uncontaminated by material life. And if I can engage myself in hearing about you and serving you, I shall easily be able to cross the ocean of material existence, which is filled with the waves of blazing, fire-like dangers. In case none of you or any of you have not realized it yet, this world is a dangerous place. It is an extremely dangerous place. We have our childlike desires, how it's going to be like this, and I'm going to make this arrangement, and I'm going to buy this and get that. But actually, the satisfaction that we long for never comes. And contrary to satisfaction, we find ourselves again and again presented with danger. This is the material world. Padam, padam, that vipadam, that tesam. It is a dangerous place. There is death, disease, and death, and fire, and war, and pestilence. And ultimately, the end for everyone. And if you think about it, it is a frightening thought, but it's true. That probably speaking, in 100 years from now, how many people, from the youngest baby to the oldest man who is alive now, will still be alive in 100 years? Isn't that long? And we tend to think we have very important things to do, you know, as we make our way through the world. And they all amount to accumulating one zero after the next zero after the next zero, and I have a whole, I end up with a whole big bag full of zeros worth nothing, and it's time to go. It's the what? The bag is light, our mind is heavy because we think it's valuable. So he says, and listen, I found this one extremely interesting. To cross over material existence, which is very difficult to do, will become very easy for me. How? For I am becoming mad to hear about your transcendental qualities and activities. It is filling me with an incredible eagerness to hear about you. It is a different taste than the tastes of this world. When one gets a taste of a relationship, and a taste that comes from that relationship, or hearing about God, of the Supreme Person, there is nothing superior to that. And Juva said, when my taste increases to the point, past the point of anchoring, past the point of attachment, when I care nothing for nothing other than hearing about and glorifying and chanting your name, automatically I'll cross over this ocean of danger. It will be effortless. I will be across it already, in fact, because my consciousness is filled with the desire to be with you constantly, O Lord. I don't want the things of this world, the unlimited zeros, the heavy zeros. So that's what Juba says. And these pastimes are eternal. And I shall cross over the ocean of the material world simply by hearing about them. And he goes on a little bit more. Finally ending. I also found this very interesting, how he ends his prayers. He says, O Lord, you are the personified form of benediction, which means that he is capable of giving to anyone anything that they desire. And that concept itself is interesting, because it causes me to ask, well, what is it that I desire? What is it that you desire? Maybe this isn't the right time to think about it very, very deeply. What is it? Take a moment, though, and think, what is it that I actually desire deepest in my heart? Often we don't actually know We're like children who desire, if you want to make a child crazy, bring them into a toy store. Because they end up wanting everything all at once. And that's the way we are. The mind goes like this, and it wants that, and it wants that, and it wants that. It's actually very interesting to bring a child into a toy store. I mean, it's very interesting to watch someone else's child being put into a toy store. Because this incredible politics starts taking place, because the child wants. And then it will focus on something right before it wants. And then the mother starts trying, or the father starts to pull the child away, and then the war begins, and the child brings out his weapon, and that is crying. And then what is the meaning of crying? The meaning of crying is, if you don't give me what I want, I'm going to cry so loud that everyone in the whole store is going to look at you. And they're going to think that you're the worst mother, father in existence, and that you torture your children. And I'm going to cry. And then the parent says, no, 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 we're going to go away and come out. We're going to leave immediately. And they said, watch me now. They'll throw themselves on the ground. What are you doing to that poor child? But children aside, and we tend to not really know what we want, to get out of life, what the purpose of our life is. We don't think of it because it's a frightening thing if you think of what the purpose of your life is, and then you look at your life and see how little of your life is actually centered on achieving what you want. And it's just caught up in doing so many other things, trying to survive. So Dhruva calls the Lord who is standing before him, personified benediction, that you have the capacity to award anything to anyone, whoever approaches you. But one who is actually your devotee has no other desire other than worshiping you and serving you. And that brings them the most satisfaction, because it is based on the fullest, the deepest, the most natural love that is springing from our true self, from us. When we are awake to our true relationship with Krishna, with the Lord, all we desire is to serve him with great, great love. It's completely natural. And for such a person, Dhruva says, this is far better than becoming a king and being the lord over a kingdom. So he's learned this. That is the best benediction that can come from serving and pleasing you. It is more ability to serve you. So that's what he ends up desiring. I want to serve you. I want to serve you. I want to serve you. It is love. I want to serve you. I want to serve you. It is so hard for us to conceive of this in this world, because we don't really have a concept of love. We have a concept of lust and call that love, but we don't have a concept so clearly in our mind of selfless loving service. But that is what we are longing for. That is what everyone is longing for. And it is effective when it is to the Supreme Person. So all I ask from you, O Lord, is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet. You already are maintaining an ignorant devotee like myself who desired so many other things. I'm ignorant. I wasn't full of knowledge. I desired so many other things, and still you care for me. It is not that you wait for someone to be perfected before you notice them and care for them. But you are the causelessly merciful maintainer of even ignorant devotees like me. You are just like a cow who takes care of the newly born calf by supplying milk and giving it protection from attack. So please consider me just like your calf, and I am placing myself fully under your protection. I am yours. I no longer want to be the Lord, the King. I no longer want revenge. I don't want any of this. I am yours. Let me serve you. That was his conclusion. Okay. The story actually continues for quite a while, but we won't. Anyway. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Despite it being late at night, you are all very attentive. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
How can we give our determination?
Determination. There are so many ways to increase our determination. One way is to study. You could study the holy books, or you can increase your determination to serve Krishna by studying the newspaper. But it's usually full of such horrible things that it makes you turn to Krishna anyway. But direct, that's indirect. The direct way is to study about great souls. Usually in contemporary literature, there is something called the anti-hero. Did you ever read that? In your study of literature, the anti-hero, a person who everyone is the center of the novel, but he's not a hero at all. He's like everyone else, just an ordinary person who has faults and does everything wrong. But we should study heroes, the people who do everything right, who get the right result, like Dhruva Maharaj, like Prahlad Maharaj, like all the great and deepest saints in history in every tradition. They focus their attention on the Supreme Lord. And by hearing about great people, we become inspired naturally to follow in their footsteps. Now the heroes are, they're not, certainly not the politicians of the world. They're, who are the heroes? They're the movie stars and the sports stars and the musicians. People whose character is very base and gross. But we should study to build character. We should study the people who have character. And we should associate with people with character. People who are more determined than us. And of course, if we chant Hare Krishna, that purifies the heart, and all the impurities, the things that make us whimsical. The opposite of determination is whimsical. Yeah, it's one opposite word. But whimsical. The whimsical means that your mind wants this and you do that, and then your mind wants that and then you do that, and then your mind wants that, and you never get anywhere. It's like if you want to walk from here to the end of the road, and then you say, oh, what's in this house? And then what's in this house? And what's in that house? Right? Whatever your mind says, you follow. And of course, you won't get anywhere. So if we can't become perfectly determined, which most of us can't, at least we should become determined to give up our pride. What I mean to say is, if we can't have the wonderful qualities the great heroes have, then we can ask ourselves, then why is it that I'm so proud nevertheless? So at least we should become humble. And from humility, great things are born. And that's the great contradiction of life. That although we're confronted with our weaknesses and our lack, day after day after day after a day, still we're proud. If you think about it, how is it possible? But yet, it's possible. Not only possible, but it's what happens. Okay, one more question and then we'll end. One more question and an attempt at an answer, if there is a question. Yes.
It's very embarrassing to approach Krishna for material benefits. It says that we should approach Krishna even that we have a material desire, but it feels very embarrassing to approach Krishna for something different from his service to love for Krishna.
Because you already have a lot of knowledge, so it's especially difficult and embarrassing. But yet, although the recommendation isn't to approach Krishna for material things, like Dhruva, he's saying that's so foolish. But yet, if you have to approach someone, approach Krishna. It's not the highest state, certainly, of consciousness. It's not purity. It's not pure love, but it's on the path. Dhruva approached the Lord to gain something material, something huge, but it was material. And the result of approaching Krishna for something material is you end up losing your material desire. So it will purify you. But because you have knowledge, it's very difficult to do. So don't approach him for that. Approach him for something more wonderful than material things. But if you have to approach someone, something, approach him. I'm not sure I answered that question very well. Did it? You're probably thinking of something specific.
No, actually, it's a waste of time. If I already stand before Krishna, so what? I ask something material?
So what did you ask me? You already know the answer.
No, but why do you endeavor for... If I not approach Krishna, I endeavor materially for something material. So I waste my time another way.
So what you should do is endeavor to use your material situation in the service of Krishna. And that way you'll get what you need materially. You have to maintain yourself. You have to maintain your family. It's practical. You have a prescribed duty. You should do that. Not for the pleasure of me, oneself, but you should learn the art of using your life in the service of Krishna, if your realization is as you're saying it is. You know, that you don't want to be materialistic, and you don't want to work for yourself, and you don't want to approach Krishna for those things. So learn how to use your life, your whole life, your family situation, your work, in such a way that Krishna will be satisfied. Yatta pravata bhutanam yena savamidatam. Please, Krishna, I'm doing this work in such a way that you will be pleased. I'm making it as an offering for you. I'm a family man. I have a wife. I have a child. I'm doing my duties in such a way that you'll be pleased. I earn a living. I work. I'm working in such a way that you'll be pleased. Then all those things that we do on the so-called material level become spiritualized. And that is the art of work. How to live in the material world, but actually transcend it while living in it. So, I didn't answer the words of your question, but I answered, I think I answered the spirit of your question. Is that okay? So if one doesn't want to be materialistic, one shouldn't be materialistic. But then one could be in an awkward situation where one doesn't want to be materialistic but doesn't have the strength to be incredibly spiritual either. So we should try our best. We should try our best, be humble, associate with devotees, chant, and try our best, and make our very humble little offerings to Krishna as best we can. I mean, that's the situation we all find ourselves in. We have maybe lofty, grand spiritual desires, but insignificant abilities. So we should become humble and try our best and get good association and good advice how we can proceed. Sometimes when I there was one series of classes that I gave, and I used to have an hourglass, you know, with the sand going through. I used to keep that in front of me, so I'd know how many minutes I had left in the class. But just to remind myself and the devotees who are watching, that we can proceed as we want, as quickly or as slowly as we want. But the reality is that our time is running out. Even though it doesn't feel like it moment to moment to moment. But that's the reality, that our time is running out. So we have a little pressure on us. We should humbly proceed and move forward. But we should also remember that Dhruva, when he wanted something, he didn't waste time. He left immediately for the forest. And because he was very fixed, he got his results so quickly. So we may not be so fixed, so we should be patient with ourselves. We may not be so determined and so sincere, so we should be patient with ourselves. And yet we should know that the hourglass, the sand, is running through all our lives. So we live in the tension between these two points, I find. One point is time is running out, and the other is if you put too much pressure on yourself, you're going to drive yourself crazy. So slow down and take it easy, but yet time is running out. But yet, you live between the tension of these two opposing points, and you have to figure out how to deal with it, all of us individually. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.